If you've listened to the show for any length of time, you know that I'm a big fan of connecting with locals when you're traveling someplace. If you're just going to be inside the tour bus, then you might as well stay home. The best parts of travel for me are when you get out into the marketplace or into the cafe where you meet the locals and have a chance to interact. If you're also looking to experience this, then check out Explore Worldwide, whose local tour leaders will get you off the beaten track and into the heart of the adventure, helping you get past being a tourist, experiencing local culture, and finding places you would not find by yourself. And isn't that what travel is all about? If you're thinking about your next adventure, head to exploreworldwide.com to find out more.
Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 891. Today, Amateur Traveler talks about mercados and monuments, pyramids and hot air balloons, chocolate and conquistadors as we go to Mexico City. This is Chris Christensen from Amateur Traveler. Let's talk about Mexico City. I'd like to welcome to the show Ashley Russell from SheRoamsAbout.com, which is predominantly about Mexico. And oddly enough, Ashley has come to talk to us about Mexico and more specifically, Mexico City. Ashley, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And we have covered Mexico City at least a couple times on Amateur Traveler. It's been a while, and Ashley has some things that we have not talked about, so I am curious to see those. Ashley, what is your connection with Mexico and with Mexico City?
So it actually all started during the pandemic. I was working as an interior designer at the time, and when things closed down in the pandemic, you couldn't really go into people's homes, so things got a little harder in that industry. And I ended up going to work overseas, and I went to Mexico. And that was where my love affair with Mexico started. I was there for a few months. I started a travel website because I enjoyed it so much. And I've been going back ever since, multiple times a year. And now it's my main job, talking about Mexico.
Excellent. And why should someone go to Mexico City?
I think Mexico City is a very unique city. People always say there's so much to do, there's so much architecture, history, but what I think is interesting about it is, and what people don't expect, is that it's a fusion between the European opulence that you would get in cities like Paris and London with all of the culture and flavor that comes with Latin America. So it's a really unique place to visit in that regard. And there is so much to do and see, and there really is something for everyone.
Excellent. And eat also, in my experience. So
that's one of the big things. We will talk about food.
Excellent. What kind of itinerary are you going to recommend for us here?
Okay. So one of the first things that I recommend doing in Mexico City, when I was putting together my ideas for your listeners, I really wanted to focus in on the things that they're not going to find on all the lists that come up when you Google it or the main guidebooks. Those things are great. And they're obviously on those lists for a reason, but there's other things that you can do that you may not know about unless you've been to Mexico City over and over again, like I have.
Okay. And so lot of those, just go listen to the older episode. We talked about them there is what I'm hearing.
Yeah. I'll touch on a few of them as they fit in. But I do think if anyone is thinking about going to Mexico City and they've done any amount of research, they're going to already know about the Museum of Anthropology. Going to see the Palacio de Bellas Artes, Frida Kahlo House. You probably already know those things. Mm-hmm. So the ideas that I've come up with will fit in great to a first-timer itinerary if you want to add in some hidden gems. but they're also great for people who have maybe already been once or twice and they're wondering what else there is.
Okay.
Okay. I was actually in Mexico City a couple of weeks ago trying out some new tours and experiences. And it was marketed to me as a market tour. Okay. People love markets. Markets are obviously...
I love markets, yes.
Yes. And they're the beating heart of many cultures around the world. But in Mexico, you really see that from the little villages all the way up to the metropolis of Mexico City. They are the epicenter of the community. But this tour surprised me because it's actually also a food tour and it's a cooking class. So you get a lot of bang for your buck and it's very local, very authentic. So I think this is a great place to start for people. So the tour, it takes about 5 to 6 hours altogether and it starts in the center of the city. And the first market that you head to is actually only a 10-minute walk from the Zocalo and the main cathedral.
Okay.
But it's one of those things where you're walking along and talking about how the city is sinking and all of these interesting things and looking at the architecture. And then it's you turn a corner and you've just gone through a portal into a local neighborhood. And it's right there. It's 10 minutes maximum walk from the city center. And a lot of people just don't find it. They're buzzing around it and they don't enter. So the market in this area is called the Mercado Abelardo L. Rodriguez, the Abelardo L. Rodriguez Market. And what's interesting about this market is that it was actually built in the 1930s as a prototype for what they wanted the future of markets to look like in Mexico.
Okay.
Previous to this style of covered market, market trading in Mexico always happened on the ground. So people would bring a blanket or a cloth of some sort, arrange their items. And you still see that around the country, typically with indigenous people, they'll be selling items and they still do it that way. But in Mexico City, disease and sickness was spreading really quickly. And so the government came up with this idea that what if we just took people off the ground? Maybe that will help.
Yeah. Seems like a good idea to try, yeah.
Yeah, simple problem, simple solution. So that's exactly what they did. And because the market is the center of the community, this market was built with a daycare, a library, an auditorium, which is still a public theater that's used for community events to this day. But what's really special about it is that there's almost 16,000 square feet of murals in this market.
I see that. It's fascinating.
It is. It's very interesting. Murals in Mexico City, the most famous would be the ones that are in the National Palace.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And those are the ones by Diego Rivera, who's a very famous, probably the most famous Mexican muralist. Also right. famous for being the love-hate partner of Miss Frida Kahlo. So you will see him around the city as you travel, different things pointing to him. And these murals were actually painted by a group of his students with him overseeing them. There was 10 students in total. 6 of them were Mexican, and then the other 4 were actually from the U.S. And that's just an interesting mix. The tour goes into more detail about that. And largely, they focus on political issues, which is also what Diego Rivera was known for his murals in the palace. They cover everything from indigenous rights to fascism, even Nazism, exploitation of workers. And it's really interesting because where the tour starts you, it starts you in the indigenous times before Spain came over. And as you walk through, you can see the timeline all the way up to more modern times of how politics and these different issues evolved over the years.
Okay.
But what's really interesting about this is that there is a staircase that's gated, but the gate is open and the murals head up the staircase. And as you go up, there's a couple of little offices up there. And on the back wall, stretching the entire length of the wall, is this huge relief sculpture that was done by a very famous Japanese-American sculpture artist called Isamu Noguchi. And his work can be found. He actually has a piece in the White House Rose Garden right now. He's got pieces in Seattle, New York, Honolulu. He's very well regarded in the art world. And this artwork that he did was one of the earlier sculptures that he ever did. And it's actually valued at $2 million. And almost no one goes to see it because it's upstairs in the market. No one knows to visit. It's very interesting to go and see. That's the first part of that tour. There's no rope, there's no entrance fee, there's no guard telling you to stand back. It is just there for the public. So that's also very interesting. I was not expecting it. I thought it was really interesting. So after that part, after the first visit to the market, there's also a food stop there where you'll be eating at a street food stall, really typical Mexican street food breakfast. And the market workers are lining up to buy their food from this lady. She is where they all go in the morning and you get in line with everybody else. It's a very authentic experience.
And what is a typical Mexico City breakfast?
That depends on who you
are. I've had more lunches in the markets.
Yes. The main thing for the working community is that they want something that's cheap and that is going to fill them up all day. And so I do warn you to take it easy because the food stops are very filling. And by the end of the day, you're going to be very full. The first stop is actually tamales. It's like a corn dough that has different fillings. She has different fillings every day. And then along with that, she offers atole, which is a corn-based drink that's actually made of the same mixture as the tamale. It's thicker than a milkshake. And there's different flavors. The day that I went, I had the blue corn flavor, but they do a chocolate and there's a couple different flavors every day. But it is very filling. So I recommend that you pace yourself.
Okay.
So after the first stop, then you'll head back to the Zocalo. And I think this is one of the reasons why this is a great thing to do early on in the trip is because you actually take the metro to the second stop. Okay. But they don't just herd you on to the metro and you're on your way. They actually take the time to get you comfortable with the system. They tell you how to buy tickets, how to get through the gates, how to read the maps, how to navigate the system, how to stay safe. So I believe I read that you have taken the metro in Mexico City. Is that right?
I have, yes.
It can be a little daunting to take public transit in new places. I find this to be a really good option. It is a great way to learn how to do it with the help of a local, and it really just alleviates all that fear. Once you're down there, I think you realize there's really nothing to worry about, and it's like the metro everywhere else.
I talked to somebody when I was in Mexico City. I guess I've just been there the once, who was so intimidated by the metro, they were just hailing cabs on the street because thought they'd be safer. And I'm like, no.
Don't do that. Do not hail cabs in the street. There is a safety app for the city of Mexico City. It's the CDMX app. If you have to hail a cab, do it through that. Or take an Uber,
right? Again, where there's a record of who picked you up and where. Yes, exactly.
Yes, exactly. But the metro, it is really handy. Mexico City is super walkable, but it's really walkable within the neighborhoods. It's like between the neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. So it's a great option. It's having your own private lesson in how to not look like a foreigner on the metro.
Okay.
So then you'll take the metro to the next stop, which is the Mercado Jamaica, which is spelled like Jamaica. It translates to hibiscus. And this is somewhere you will not see another foreign face. You may have found one in the first market because they may have unwittingly stumbled upon it. No one's accidentally going to the Mercado Jamaica. It is the largest flower market in Mexico City. But in addition to that, there is a food building where people are going to, they go to buy meat and fruit and veg, but they also go for piñatas and shoelaces and whatever else. Mexican markets are just wild. They have everything. And in this market, you have the opportunity to do some mole tasting. And anyone who goes to Mexico, anywhere in Mexico, try to find some mole. It's the best. Mm-hmm. But they also have the ability to, you can buy it and they will package it for you in a way that will clear customs. So it's vacuum sealed with the ingredients. So you're actually able to take the mole paste back home. So you can make mole when you get home, which is, I think, very nice. I travel carry-on only, so I missed out on a lot of things like that. Anything that's liquid, I can't have. So this market is really interesting. It's very busy. You will also make taco stops here. There's another drink that was an indigenous drink called tepache, which is actually delicious. It is made of fermented pineapple skins. And it's actually a lovely bright red color, which is not what I was expecting from fermented pineapple skins, but it's really delicious. And then you'll stop as you go along. The guides know all of the people. They're Chilangos, they're Mexico City natives. So you get to stop and chat with locals, which is really nice as well. And then you'll do some shopping and you head out the back door of the market across the street to this open air food court with little restaurants. And a local family will actually teach you how to make salsa verde the traditional way, using the methods that their grandmother taught them. And even with her tools, her own little stone to grind ingredients. It's a really fun experience. I thought the way that this tour was pitched was that the salsa making was a very small part of it, but it was probably my favorite part of it. It's not rushed. You get to sit and chat with the family. Everyone's sitting around the table chopping their ingredients. They teach you how to grill everything on the plancha, this enormous round flat top grill that is all one temperature. So you have to know where the hot and cool spots are on it. Okay. So it's just a really fantastic experience overall. And I think it's important for a few reasons. Tours like this are really great in a country like Mexico because they directly benefit the local businesses,
right?
Which is important for them. And also, I think it's a great way to eliminate some of the fear surrounding Mexico City. Mexico, right. People are always concerned about safety in Mexico and Mexico City. And when you really go into the community and see people just going about their business, smiling, having a chat, trying some food, a lot of that fear just melts away and you realize that we're really all just the same.
Okay.
I do recommend doing that early on because now you've got the metro. Now you can get around to more places, which is going to come in handy later on. Another item that people talk about a lot in Mexico City is the Palacio de Bellas Artes.
Sure.
This is that iconic building with the beautiful colored domed roof.
The Palace of Fine Arts.
Yes. But unfortunately, a lot of people just walk up and they take their photos.
Sure.
And then they leave.
I've done that. I will admit I've never been inside.
I've done that too. But there's actually something really special in there that a lot of people miss out on. And that is the Ballet Folklorico de Mexico, the folk ballet of Mexico.
Okay.
This company has been operating since the 50s. And when you think ballet, you normally think tutus and Swan Lake.
I do, yes.
This is not what this is. This is Mexican ballet. So it's actually a bit of a journey through the different cultures and subcultures within Mexico, the different music. They cover indigenous dance with drums. Then they've got the ladies with the flowy skirts and the men in their charro outfits with their large hats. It's done on such an incredible scale, and it really is worth seeing. It's fairly inexpensive as well. I think tickets are around $40 US.
Okay.
For the 2-hour show, and it really is a spectacular. If you have any interest in Mexican music, Mexican dance, this is something that I highly recommend seeing. And you're also going to see it in one of the most beautiful theaters I've ever seen. The curtain, actually, on this stage was designed by Tiffany, the jewelry company, and it's made of glass. And so it almost looks like fish scales, but within square panes. And it has this amazing iridescent quality to it. You can look it up on Google Images. They've got pictures of it. And it is just beautiful and something you just don't expect from Mexico City. You think Mexico City, you think tacos. You don't think Tiffany's, but it's right there.
I think that was one of the things I loved about Mexico City is having grown up in California with a lot of connection with people who were from Mexico, either originally or recently, it floored me just the architecture and the beauty and the sophistication and things. It challenged my understanding of Mexico, being in Mexico City. And I like to be challenged on my stereotypes and assumptions and things like that. And this is definitely one of those buildings that will do that, even if you don't get inside.
No, absolutely. It is beautiful. And there is a real stateliness to Mexico City that you don't expect. And that's why I liken it to cities in Europe, because that's
sure.
It actually was the influence. That is where they pulled it from. The Paseo de la Reforma, the large avenue that runs between the castle, that was actually designed to mimic the Champs-Élysées in Paris. So this was not by accident. They intentionally wanted to build a beautiful, opulent, world-class city. And I think that they achieved it.
Yep.
So we've got the Palacio de Bellas Artes. It is beautiful outside, more beautiful inside, if you like Tiffany. But that curtain in particular, I've never heard of a glass curtain before. So it's pretty spectacular. And that actually wasn't the only thing that Tiffany did in Mexico City. The Grand Hotel in Mexico City, it was originally built as a trade center, and it has a very famous glass domed roof. It's also in the Centro Histórico. And that domed roof was also designed by Tiffany. So Tiffany's going around designing beautiful glass. Also in the center, there is another monument that I think doesn't necessarily get the praise that it should, and that's the Monument to the Revolution, Palacio de Bellas Artes. I think it's a little off to the side, which is why it gets skipped a lot, or people will walk up, take the picture, and walk away. Same thing. But actually, there's a few things interesting about this monument. First of all, it's an absolute feat of engineering, and it's gorgeous. But also, there is a museum in it, and there's a glass elevator that runs right up the middle of the monument. And that is the elevator that you take to go up the monument. It's a very cool experience just to be in this glass elevator. It's 360 glass. And then when you get to the top of the elevator, you can go further up by stairs, but on this level at the base of the dome, there's actually a cafe there where you can get horchata, coffee, you can even get handheld crepes and sit and take in the view, which is really nice. Also at the base of this monument, there is usually a market there, especially on the weekends. So it is a little bit of a destination, and it's really popular with locals. Surprisingly, you would think a monument like that would draw tourists, but it's mainly locals that you see in and around this monument. And actually just across the street, so this monument lights up at night. It's really beautiful. They light it up in different colors at night. I was there over Mexican Independence Day, and they had lit it up in the colors of the Mexican flag. Other nights, it's just in pretty purples and blues. But across the street, there's a restaurant called Pizzorama. And yes, it is a pizza restaurant. But you would never know that it's there. It's mainly locals that are there. It's actually a rooftop terrace with clear, unobstructed views over the Monument to the Revolution.
Got it. Okay.
You don't have to go there and have pizza. You can just go there and grab a beer or a drink, but it is definitely worth seeing it at night all lit up, and you do not get a better view than the view from Pizzorama. But it is a little hard to find, so do Google it. When you walk into the building, it feels like you've walked into the wrong place or an office building, but there's an elevator and you just take it to the top, and all of a sudden you're in this beautiful terrace overlooking this amazing monument that I think doesn't get enough attention.
And it's in a downtown area with skyscrapers. And actually my favorite photo that I took of it was in the reflection of one of the very modern buildings nearby. Yeah. So
yeah. It's beautiful. I think it's stunning. I think that I was there a couple of weeks ago and I walked around taking all these different pictures of it. I think my camera roll has about 30 pictures of the same building because it just looks so different from every angle. And I just love it. I think it's gorgeous. Okay, so we've covered some of the monuments. The next thing that I recommend doing is visiting Coyoacán. I know you've been to Coyoacán.
The oldest European neighborhood in Mexico City.
Yes, absolutely. And most people really just visit for Frida Kahlo and then they leave. But this is a great way to put your new metro experience to work.
Right.
Hop on the metro, head to Coyoacán. Yep. It is quite far from the city center. And with traffic in Mexico City being what it is, the metro is a really easy way to get there. And in Coyoacán, again, most people just visit the Frida Kahlo Museum, which is a good thing to visit. But there is more to this, like you just said. One thing that I recommend doing in Coyoacán is taking a free walking tour. So there is a company called Estación México.
Okay.
And they are easily identifiable by their hot pink t-shirts and umbrellas. So it's great because it makes them really easy to find when you're trying to start your tour. They offer a few different walking tours. They've got one in Roma and Condesa. They have one in the historic center. And the one in Coyoacán was really interesting. I really enjoyed it. The guides with Estación México are all Mexico City locals. The company is a Mexico City company, and they really are very passionate about the city. I actually think that's true about every guide I've encountered in Mexico City. I do recommend taking tours or hiring guides when you're there because it is surprisingly inexpensive for such a major city. But these guides are so well-versed in their city, the culture, the history, and they're really keen to share it with you. So the experience that you get in Mexico City with a local is very different than what you get wandering around by yourself.
Right.
So I always recommend at least once visit something with a guide, and then you can explore on your own when you've got a little bit of basis to go off of.
Yeah, when I visited Coyoacán, it was with the guest of the first time we did an episode on Mexico City who grew up in Coyoacán.
Oh, Laura. Amazing.
And not everybody has that opportunity, so a guide is a good alternative.
Yes. Yeah, it's really good. And it's, as I said, it's surprisingly inexpensive. And also in Mexico, they take tourism very seriously. So anyone who's operating as a guide, they have to go through school for this. They're tested on their history. There's licensing involved. They have to renew that license. They take it very seriously. So you're getting real professional guides, not just people Googling things and then wandering around pointing.
And then obviously, if you're taking a free tour, we always encourage you, those of you who can't afford to, tip generously, because that is how they make their livelihood.
That's how they make their money, yes. So the free walking tour is a great way to get to grips with Coyoacán. And like you said, the history. Coyoacán is the oldest part of Mexico City and actually remained independent from the city until the 1920s, when they were eventually finally absorbed into what is now Mexico City. And on the walking tour, you'll find a lot of those old buildings, centuries old buildings, convents, and they talk about the history and the legends behind them, the people who lived there, and why Coyoacán is called Coyoacán after the coyotes. Maybe there's a few versions. So there is more to Coyoacán than Frida Kahlo House. And if you're going to go all the way down there for Frida Kahlo, you might as well see more.
Yeah, I mean, this was the city of the conquistadors. You can go to the house of Cortez and the church that he founded and things like that as well. So the history does go back a ways, as it were.
It does. Yeah, it's incredibly beautiful. It's also one of the best places to see the colonial architecture in Mexico City. And the walking tour does take you down cobblestone lanes and things you just don't associate with a major city. I actually love that about Mexico City. When you head into the neighborhoods, they all feel like a different place. It never feels like you're just in one big city, which I really like. So while you're in Coyoacán, this is also, I think, one of the best places in the city to try street food.
Okay.
And it's nice without the pressure of the crowds that you get closer to the center.
Sure.
It can be intimidating when you see a long line of Mexicans lining up for something and you're not even sure what it's called or what questions they're going to ask you. So Coyoacán is a good place to try that. The main Coyoacán market is great. If you head inside any of the doors and just make your way to the middle, you'll find lots of street food style vendors in the food section. And the people who work there, it does feel like they're yelling at you as soon as you walk into that area. But that's actually because their job is to seat you. So you don't have to worry about being seated at the restaurant you want to eat at. They just find you a spot and then they'll bring you menus from everywhere and you can eat from everywhere. And so it does feel like you're, if you've ever been to Venice or somewhere like that, where the callers are out the front of the restaurant and it feels like they're trying to kidnap you into their terrace.
Sure.
It feels like that, except they are actually helping you. You can eat anywhere you want. And it's also worth noting that in this market is one of the places where you can get the authentic Mexican Coca-Cola that Mexican locals will always tell you about. It's the small glass bottle.
Right. Made with sugar cane.
Exactly. And you can get it in this part of the market very easily. That's just what they serve. And it truly is delicious. Then as you're...
You mentioned that this is a great place to get street food. You're in the market. What are you ordering?
So the first thing that I tried actually in this market was nopales, which is cactus.
Oh, sure.
That was the first time that I'd ever had that. They have something called sopas, which is like a small... There's actually small ones and big ones. That's the funny thing about Mexico as well. You're never quite sure what you're going to get or how big it's going to be. Sometimes you could order something to eat that you think is going to be small because it's inexpensive, and maybe you order two and you end up with two platters of something that's about 16 times more food than you expected.
I'm getting deja vu as you say that. Yes. Okay.
So the sopas can be big or small. Most Mexico City street food is based on the same thing. There's some form of a tortilla with usually beans and then toppings on top, and you get that sort of thing in different varieties. I do recommend trying cactus if you have not. It is actually delicious if you can get past it in your mind, the thought of cactus. It's not going to hurt you. There are no prickles. It is actually quite delicious.
I think I've had it more in cactus-based salsas than trying cactus itself.
It's nice. They do it on top. Most street food or food in these markets, they do also tend to throw a bunch of lettuce on top. Mm-hmm. So things do get mixed in, but I think it is nice. Also, steak is always a nice option. But I do recommend the sopas and the gorditas, which are like a little, puffier version. But the main thing that I recommend eating in Coyoacán is actually elotes, which is the Mexican street corn.
Oh, sure.
You can get that in other places, but Coyoacán is where it's going to be the best. And it is worth noting that there are people who sell it on the side of the road on an open flame and it's grilled. That is not the typical way to have elotes. Elotes are usually boiled. So if you want to do the real delicious traditional elotes, you want to go somewhere where they boil them.
So I'm picturing a styrofoam cup of corn, white cheese, and spices. Am I going to get
You're
the same
the
sort of thing? I'm in the neighborhood. Okay.
That
I'm thinking of what I had in, say, Oaxaca.
That's called esquites, which is... Okay. All the same ingredients of elotes, except elotes is still on the cob.
Elotes is still on the cob. Got it. All right.
Yeah, on a stick.
Yep, yep.
And that's why they're able to fire grill them.
Okay. But
I do recommend going for the boiled version, and that you can find actually further up into Coyoacán Center. There's the main garden with the fountain with the coyotes. And if you actually just look around, you will see people walking around with the elotes, and you just follow them where they came from. And you'll find opposite the market, there's a covered, it's one of those sort of funny Mexican indoor-outdoor places. It's indoors, there's not really any walls, so it's outdoors. And that's where you'll find them selling the elotes, and it is fantastic. I have it every single time I go to Mexico City. It's my favorite. I love it, hands down.
Excellent.
Also in Coyoacán, in this same area with the main garden, the main plaza, there's a couple of markets here as well. There's the one market that people tend to go to that it's very obviously a market. It's marked with those lovely, colorful banners that you see all over Mexico.
Okay.
But I don't recommend that you go there because actually almost everything there is pretty, I don't want to say cheap, but it's not the high quality handicraft stuff that Mexico does so well.
Okay. Are we talking about things made by the indigenous people of China? Cheap
yes.
or?
Okay. Yes, that would be, yes, that would be the type.
Okay.
Shiny multi-packs. It's the sort of things that we would buy at, say, a dollar store. If you're trying to, it's March, so if you're trying to get your St. Patrick's Day, whatever, glasses, that's the sort of stuff that you're finding in that market.
Got it.
So I don't recommend going to that market.
What's the name of that market?
I actually think it's called the Artisan Market.
Okay, that's going to be confusing.
It's far from that. But opposite, this other market I'm going to recommend is much easier to find because by the door, they have an enormous inflatable Mexican doll. So you can really find her easily. She's huge. And you'll be able to see her. And that's the market you want to go to. And that place is called the Mexico Diseño Bazaar. So the Mexico Design Bazaar. And everything in here is handmade by the people selling it to you. It can be anything from snacks to candy to candles, jewelry, backpacks and purses, clothes, soaps. There's all sorts of things that they make. And this is one of my favorite places to go shopping. It is a fantastic place to pick up some unique things for yourself. Also a great place to find little things to take home as souvenirs or gifts. But there are two dueling markets, and go to the one with the giant inflatable doll. That's where you want to go. You cannot miss her. She's huge. It also happens to be in a historic church as well, which is just a nice added touch.
All right.
And then while you're down in Coyoacán, there is one other neighborhood that's a little bit farther. You can also get there by the metro, or you can just hop in an Uber and it would be very quick to get to where you're trying to go. And that area is called San Angel or San Angel on the map. And this is another very old neighborhood. Again, you're going to see convents, you're going to see colonial architecture, cobblestone streets. And it's just that little bit further off the beaten path of Coyoacán. Coyoacán, also, I should mention that on the weekends, it gets an influx of over 70,000 people just on the weekend, every weekend. It's very popular for people who live in Mexico City. It's also really popular as a place to go for quinceañeras and
Okay.
dates. So when you're walking around Coyoacán, you'll often see people all loved up, holding hands with their arms around each other. It's considered to be like a very romantic location in Mexico City. So if you're going to visit and you don't like crowds, I recommend going during the week. And in San Angel, as soon as you head over there, you lose a lot of the crowds of Coyoacán. And there's a couple of things in San Angel that are very interesting. On Saturdays, they also have a market, which is called El Bazar Sábado, which is the Saturday bazaar, and also handicrafts. It's really nice. It's really easy to find. It's on the map right by the Central Plaza. But if you want to do something a little more unusual, there is a museum in San Angel called the Museo de El Carmen, the Museum of Carmen, and it actually has mummies. So a lot of the time when people think mummies, they think Egypt. But you actually don't have to go that far. There's mummies in Mexico, not just in Mexico City, but there are mummies in this museum. So the museum itself is in a very old building. It is cold, it's very religious. But as you head through the museum, they actually have, I think they have 10 or 12 mummies in there in caskets with glass on the front, and you can see them quite clearly. So if anybody has any interest in that sort of morose, macabre, though it may be, it is interesting. It's a part of human history. And it's the only place in Mexico City where you can actually see mummies.
Okay, then.
There you go. Something a little different. And then the next thing that I recommend is, I had mentioned this to you before when I was talking about Mexico City. Most people in Mexico City, when they visit for the first time, or even just continuing to visit, people tend to go to the same places over and over again.
Sure.
And Roma and Condesa are the two neighborhoods that people are really drawn to. They are known to be safe, they feel safe, super gentrified. Most of the restaurants have English language menus. People will greet you in English, people speak English there. And a lot of the faces that you see around are not local faces. You're seeing the faces of other travelers, digital nomads, expats. And that's nice. But that's not what I would call Mexico City. So I've made it a bit of a mission this year to encourage people to not just go to Roma and Condesa and stay there. There's just so much more to the city. And I think it's more of a safety blanket because, again, a lot of people are concerned about safety in Mexico City, and that's a concern everywhere. But I, as a woman, I visit Mexico City all the time by myself, and I've never had an issue. Anytime people talk to me, it's purely just to chat to me or to help me because I look lost or I've done something wrong or I'm confused about something. I think people need to not worry about it so much. A lot of people go to Roma and Condesa, but it is my mission to drive people out of that area. And the area where I think people should go that's really overlooked that nobody really talks about is Colonia Juarez. It's actually just north of both of those neighborhoods. If you look at them on a map, they're side by side, and Juarez is just above it.
And
And
they're just south of the Museum of Anthropology that you talked about, which is certainly great. We're not going to talk about it a lot on this show, but it's something we would recommend. And the Independence Monument, not the Monument of the Revolution that we
Yes.
talked about.
Yeah, exactly. And where the Angel of Independence is, how that road, that the Paseo de la Reforma, it cuts diagonally down across Colonia Juarez. So that kind of works as the northern border, so to speak, of this
Got it.
neighborhood. But primarily, this neighborhood is known for the Zona Rosa, which is the gay neighborhood, which is true. It's there, but it's actually a really small part of this neighborhood. And it's over to the side. And if that's what you were going off of, you would be surprised when you're exploring Colonia.
Okay.
So Colonia Juarez used to be a very affluent part of the city. And then after some earthquake damage, fell into disrepair. It has a lot of the beautiful architecture that you get in Roman Condesa. It was designed to be, it was supposed to be an affluent neighborhood, and it was supposed to be very international. So all of the streets in this neighborhood are named after popular cities in Europe, like Milan and London. There's a Liverpool Avenue. So they, So this was supposed to be this neighborhood that ultimately Roma turned into. And after the earthquake, everybody left. A lot of the buildings fell into disrepair, squatters moved in, and it became a bit of an unsavory neighborhood. And it has gone through a renaissance. People are moving back in and taking over these gorgeous mansions and being really smart about it. They're sharing the spaces. There's a place in Colonia Juarez called the Bazar Fusion, the Fusion Bazaar. And it's this gorgeous mansion. And every room in this mansion is a store by a local designer. And they make all sorts of different things. And there's beautiful restaurants outside. You can take a churro masterclass there to learn how to make churros the proper way. And this is what they're doing. I think it's really smart the way that the new age of entrepreneurs in Mexico are working. They tend to club together to share spaces, to share rent costs, and so that they're able to flourish in their business, which is really nice. But this neighborhood is just as safe as Roman Condesa. It is just as beautiful as Roman Condesa. The restaurants, bars, coffee shops are just as good, if not better, but you're able to stay there for a fraction of the price. And the major difference is that when you're walking around, the faces that you are seeing are faces of local people instead of faces of other travelers, which is really nice. I think that makes a big difference because now you're actually with the people instead of in a microcosm. A lot of my friends in Mexico City, they have a running joke about how when they go to Roma, they're the foreigners. And so I think it's a good idea to branch out a little bit. And that's why I recommend Colonia Juarez.
Okay.
Another reason why you might go here is because it is actually home to the Chocolate Museum.
So there you go. You could have led with that.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You bury the lead.
Where the Chocolate Museum is. Chocolate's such a big part of Mexican culture, Mexican history. It's an ancient ingredient. They use it all over the country. And so that museum is really great. You're able to go in and learn about the different tools that they use with it, what they use it for, offerings to the gods, how the indigenous work with it, all the way up to modern times. And there is actually a chocolate shop downstairs in the museum where you can pick up some items. But if you walk just a couple of blocks down the street, there's a place there called the Chocolateria La Rifa, L-A-R-I-F-A. And they are a chocolate shop, but not a fancy chocolate shop. They specialize in Mexican drinking chocolate and chocolate bars. But the big thing about them is that everything is ethically sourced. All of their suppliers, they can tell you down to the farm where this chocolate came from. All of their suppliers are in Mexico, in different parts of Mexico that really have a hard time with their economy. So it's nice to know that when you're buying things from this place, you're really directly helping some of these more impoverished communities or rural communities. And what is fantastic about La Rifa is that you can essentially build your own drinking chocolate. So there is a menu and it takes you step by step what to do. So you choose your size. Do you want it hot or cold? Do you want it with milk or water? How bitter do you want it? The percentages are there. Do you want to flavor it with chile or honey or cardamom? And you're able to put together your own drinking chocolate based on what you like. And it is important to note that in Mexico, chocolate is not considered to be a dessert. They will use it sometimes as dessert, but it's really common to find it in savory dishes. And you will find locals sitting around this chocolate shop just sipping their morning hot chocolate, which is unusual, I think, for people like us who may be used to that being more of a treat, so to speak. Yes. So I do recommend spending time in this neighborhood. You can visit the chocolate museum. You can then go and have chocolate. Then you could go and learn how to make churros with chocolate. This is the chocolate. They should call it the Colonia chocolate. And this is also one of the areas where I recommend for different places to eat. Okay. Again, when you are looking at where to eat in Mexico City, you fall upon a lot of the same usual suspects. And a lot of them are places that are in Roma and Condesa. Not that I don't like that neighborhood, but I just think there's more to it. So what I think is really special about some of the restaurants in Colonia Juarez is that these are run by the sort of next generation of up-and-coming Mexican chefs.
Okay.
In Mexico City is really like a gastronomic powerhouse. You can find anything here and it's going to be delicious. And the standard for restaurants and food and bars is so high that if it's not great, it closes down. Nine times out of 10, what you try in Mexico City is going to be fantastic. But in this neighborhood in particular, I picked out a couple of restaurants and a street food option that they focus on Mexican fusion food.
Okay.
So I come across a lot of people. All I do is Mexico. It's all I talk about. And so I talk to people all the time about where to eat in Mexico City. I get asked this question constantly. And I come across a lot of travelers who have this idea in their head where they are only willing to eat at places that are what they consider to be traditionally Mexican food.
Okay.
And I think in doing that, they're missing out on a lot of great food and a lot of innovations that these chefs are doing. But also, I think it's quite short-sighted because the example I like to give is Tacos al Pastor.
Sure.
Really famous Mexico City. You go to Mexico City, you want to get your Tacos al Pastor. But that dish, I think, only dates back to the 1930s, and it was developed by Lebanese immigrants. So
that makes so much sense. Because it really looks like somebody who knew shawarma invented tacos. Yeah, okay. All right. Exactly, I did not know that.
Yeah, and there is quite an influence of that. When you look at traditional or ancient Mexican cuisine, it was very basic. They worked off of the ingredients that they had there, and they lacked a lot of spices, and they lacked a lot of different meats. So when the Spanish were coming over at the time, there was a lot of Moorish influence already from the Middle East into Spain. They were bringing the spices over, and that really made a big impact in Mexican cuisine and also food. There was, like, they didn't have pork that was brought over by the Spanish.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's just interesting. There's actually another version of tacos. If you go just south of Mexico City into Puebla, there's tacos called tacos arabes, Arab tacos.
Oh, sure. Love it.
Yeah. And they use pita bread instead of tortillas. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of influence, but people get this block up where they think, I only want to eat Mexican food. It's Mexican food is maybe not what you think it is.
Right.
So I picked out a few fusion restaurants that are fantastic, that are in Colonia Juarez, super safe neighborhoods, so you can walk to dinner here or lunch. Mm-hmm. The first one is Masala y Maíz, so masala and corn. And this restaurant, they specialize in Mexican, East Indian, and East African fusion.
Okay.
And they are, it's interesting. You'll find dishes here, Mexican infladitas, which are a street food. It's like a little tortilla that gets puffed up on the plancha.
But
they're serving them with chickpeas and tamarind chutney. So you get like a real blend. And I actually think it's a perfect marriage because Indian food is so deep in flavor and so rich. And with Mexican, it sounds like it should clash, but it's actually a marriage made in heaven.
Okay.
So they're fantastic. It is a smaller restaurant and it is popular in the gastronomy scene, but not in the public scene, the tourist scene. So it can get busy. So I do recommend booking a table.
And just the look of this here, I'm thinking we're thinking a little more high end than my street food, for instance, in terms of how much this is going to cost me.
Yes, higher end than street food, but no, not high end. Not compared to the other options in Mexico City. There are some very expensive restaurants, and this is not a very expensive restaurant. This is a bit of a nicer place. I actually find that their drinks are a little on the pricey side for Mexico City. So if you were to forego the bottle of wine, you'd have a really reasonably priced meal.
Okay.
Another place I recommend also in Colonia Juarez is Wakando, which is Asian Mexican fusion. And they've got some really cool dishes like the Thai enchiladas are delicious, or the hoisin duck tacos.
Okay.
It's really interesting. They mix a lot of different types of cuisines from Asia in with Mexican. So sometimes you'll find Mexican dishes like a taco that's really just entirely Asianized by hoisin duck. But then there's other ones where they've just added a bit of an Asian flair into something that's more Mexican and vice versa. So that's a really great restaurant. It was opened by a local chef and it is a newer restaurant. I think they only opened last year. So it is quiet. People are still discovering it, but it's getting a lot of buzz in the foodie community in Mexico City. People are loving Wakando. And I ate there a couple of weeks ago and it really was fantastic. And they're actually open for breakfast as well, which is a surprise. They're open all day.
Could you spell that for me?
Yes, it's actually a bit of a pun. It's Wakando, which is W-O-K, like a wok you cook in, and then A-N-D-O, which is, that's wok in Spanish. Which
got
is,
it. Okay.
Wok. Okay, so those are the two main restaurants that I recommend in Colonia Juarez, but it wouldn't be Mexico without street food. So in Colonia Juarez, just to do something different, because I could have recommended a taco, but everybody does that. I'm going to recommend a burrito stand, which is interesting because burritos in Mexico City are usually not something that you find because it's a very northern dish. They're actually not even entirely sure if it's Mexican at all. It might be Tex-Mex, but of course, Texas was part of Mexico. So that area developed the burrito. It was something.
If it's Tex-Mex, it's older than fajitas, for instance.
And it is, you do have to be careful in Mexico and Mexico City because they have different words for things regionally. I went into a restaurant the first time I was in Mexico and I saw quesadilla and I was like, I know what that is. So I ordered a quesadilla, but it was not the quesadilla that you might get at, say, Chili's. It was very different. It was more like a deep fried empanada. They do have different words for things. If you're looking at ordering these sorts of foods in Mexico City, I recommend Googling the word of what you want with Mexico City, and it'll show you what that is because it really is different. Mexico City is an island anyways, but it does vary. They use the same names for different things around the country. So just be aware of that. The burrito place is called Los Burros a Todo Mecate. So that's the donkeys at full speed. Roughly is what that translates to. And this place is fantastic. So he specializes in burritos. The hygiene level is super high. The reviews are fantastic. He's nowhere near the tourist areas. You have to know he's there to know he's there. And he specializes in burritos, as I said, but he will also do burritos with a cheese crust, which is amazing. I love anything cheese. So a cheese crust on there. But also, even he has a bit of a fusion menu. So he switches up the menu from time to time. But there are dishes like the Alemana, which is German, and he uses sausage. Or Swiss, he'd use fondue cheese. And this is also one of the few places where you can actually get vegetarian street food in Mexico City, which can be hard to come by. He normally has one or two vegetarian options. Whether you're vegetarian or not, I highly recommend the squash blossom burrito. Okay. It's fantastic. He chops everything up, grills it in front of you. Like I said, super clean, really nice guy too. And you can actually pre-order via WhatsApp. If you don't already have WhatsApp when you're going to Mexico City or Mexico in general, you need it. The official language of Mexico is Spanish. The official language of Mexicans is WhatsApp. So you have to have WhatsApp. You can do anything on WhatsApp. You can get laundry services, taxis, order food, talk to your hotel. You can do anything on WhatsApp. And so if you actually Google this street food vendor, his Facebook comes up and his WhatsApp number is on there. And you can WhatsApp him and pre-order your food or check if he's open. But he's usually open between 11 and 7 every day.
Excellent.
Yes. So those are my food recommendations. This is my attempt to get people out of Roma and Condesa and also get people out of the box a little bit when it comes to their idea of what Mexican food is.
Okay.
And so in terms of hidden gems, my favorite place for a nice view in Mexico City is it's called Citizen Bar and Kitchen. Okay. This is a higher end option. It's actually on the roof of the Sofitel Hotel, which is just a few steps from the Angel of Independence statue. So it is definitely not inexpensive, but they are very flexible and very friendly there. So even if you just go and have a beer, to enjoy the view, they have no problem with that. They don't rush you out. They don't pressure you to spend money. But this place, I think, has one of the best views in the entire city. It has an outdoor wraparound terrace that is wrapped in glass, and it overlooks the Angel of Independence. My top tip is that if you go here during the week or even up until Thursday, Sunday to Thursday, sometime about an hour, half an hour before sunset, there's almost never a line, and you're able to get a seat on the patio, and you can actually watch the city go from day into night, which is really beautiful because during the day you can see the mountains and you're literally looking down on top of the Angel of Independence. And then as it falls tonight, the Angel of Independence lights up, all of the buildings light up, and it really is spectacular. And they even have gas heaters and blankets on the patio, so you can actually hang out for a while if you want to get some food. They do really good short rib tacos that I highly recommend. But I think if you want to do something special or you want to end your trip with something special, this is a fantastic place to do it.
Okay. Cool. Anything else we want to throw in the itinerary here?
There are two day trips that I recommend really highly from Mexico City. The first one is a hot air balloon ride over Teotihuacan, the pyramids just outside of the city. I just did this for my birthday in February, and it was, I think, probably one of the most incredible things I've ever done in my life. The proximity that you get to the pyramids is wild. It felt like you could just reach out and touch it. The pilots are incredible. They actually fly you literally almost into the side of the pyramid and then up, swooping up over the top, and you're able to get a view of Teotihuacan from the sky. I think it's great because it's beautiful, and the other balloons make it super magical, but you really get a sense of the scale of Teotihuacan. And when you're done with the tour, you can actually go and visit the site, which I think you've covered before, but it's nice to get the bird's eye view and to see it from up there. And also everything around there is quite rugged farmland with cacti and agave plants, and it's just really spectacular view. I highly recommend that if anybody's on the fence.
And if you're listening for episodes that go in more depth about Teotihuacan, definitely recommend going there. We have, as I said, the two other Mexico City episodes, but we also have a road trip that starts in Mexico City episode that covers Teotihuacan as well.
Great. And then the other thing that I recommend, I also did this on my last trip, was I think in your road trip episode, I think the lady touched on this, but it's the Grutas Tolantongo. And you can actually do that. It's in the state of Hidalgo, and they are those beautiful hot springs on the side of a mountain. They took the internet by storm over the last couple of years, but they are actually quite difficult to get to. It's not really, I shouldn't say it's not possible to get there by public transit, because it is. It'll just take you a very long time. And you either need to have your own car or you need to take a tour. I didn't want to drive, so I actually took a day tour from Mexico City. And tour that I took, they call it an express tour because it leaves at 4:30 in the morning.
Oh,
which
nice.
Is leaving at night. But but this is amazing for two reasons. One, when you arrive right at opening. So there was no one there. We were the only group. We arrived right as soon as the gates opened, and we were out in the pools before even the people staying in the hotels nearby were there. So that was really magical because it does get busy. And as the day goes on, it gets even busier. But most people talk about the hot spring pools on the side of the mountain, and it turns out that's not even close to the best part. There's also a cave that you can go into, and then actually a sub cave behind that. You have to walk through a freezing cold waterfall to enter this cave, which is like a hot tub. So that's fine on the way in. It's punishing on the way out, but it's good. And so you're able to sit in these hot springs. And then after that, there's actually a river that flows. It is the most surreal color. It's this strange, milky, baby blue color.
And almost that actually, like the color of water coming off a glacier, oddly enough, because this is not.
Yes. I think that the color is actually because of the barium. There's several different minerals in it, and barium actually is not very good for people, but the content in the water is so minimal, it actually doesn't impact humans at all, so that's not a concern. It is amazing. You can rent barbecues, you can just hang out. The river is broken into different sections by rocks because it actually flows quite fast. So the rocks definitely help with the current, and it's an amazing place. It's one of my favorite places I've been. The landscape is spectacular because it is mountainous, but also it's in the desert. So everything is very muted, and then you just have this vibrant color that looks like paint has spilled out. It's a really amazing day trip. But it leaves so early, so you arrive first. And then when you leave to come back, you actually beat most of the traffic coming back into Mexico City, and you're home by about 4:30 instead of the other trips, which might get you back around anywhere between 7 to 10 at night. So you actually get back into the city in enough time to take a nap and go for dinner or do something else at night, go see the ballet, something like that.
Interesting. And I see there are also two-day tours available if you are interested in spending a little longer time there. Excellent. Before we get to our wrap-up questions, anything else people should know before they book their tickets to Mexico City and Central Mexico?
Yes. My top piece of advice is to leave room in your schedule, because Mexico City is full of surprises, and you might have a good idea of what you think you're going to want to do and see. And I promise you, you will turn a corner or meet a person or stumble upon something that's really going to change your mind, and you're going to want to put time into that. I say, stay open-minded, keep your schedule flexible, and just explore the city. It is such an amazing place.
Excellent. As we start to wrap this up, you are standing in the prettiest spot in Mexico City. Where are you standing and what are you looking at?
I actually think the prettiest spot in Mexico City could be the Citizen rooftop bar and kitchen.
Okay. All right. The
view is incredible. You can see all the way to the castle in Chapultepec. You're overlooking the Angel of Independence itself. You have the Reforma. And if you went in spring, the Reforma would be all lined with jacaranda trees and this beautiful purple blossom. So I actually think that's one of the most beautiful places. I go there every time I visit because the view never gets old.
Excellent. One thing that makes you laugh and say only in Mexico City.
Oh my gosh. Okay. The thing that makes me laugh and say only in Mexico City is the wandering musicians.
Okay.
You can be sitting anywhere in a coffee shop, in a fancy restaurant, and all of a sudden a small troupe of walking mariachi enter the restaurant and perform a song and then leave. You'll also find full bands. An entire drum set arrives on the side of a patio with a singer who has an amp and an electric guitar, and they perform a song and pack up their drum kit and everything and move on. And it happens all day, all over the city.
Funny. And if you had to summarize this large and expansive city in just three words, what three words are you going to use? Oh,
I would say authentic, surprising, and friendly.
Okay, excellent. Our guest again has been Ashley Russell from SheRoamsAbout.com. And Ashley, if we want to send people to your best post on SheRoamsAbout.com about Mexico City, where are we going to send them?
You can look for "Is Mexico City Worth Visiting?" And that's a good place to jump off, because the secret is, it absolutely is.
And I know why you named it that, because people are typing that into Google, but I agree. It is definitely a place worth visiting. Ashley, thanks so much for coming on Amateur Traveler and sharing with us your love for Mexico, and especially for Mexico City.
Thank you, Chris. It was a pleasure.
A special thanks to the patrons of the show who help support Amateur Traveler financially. And a special thanks today to Nick Eula, who is the latest patron of the show. Thanks so much, Nick. If you're interested in learning how you can become a patron of the show, go to patreon.com/amateurtraveler. There is news for the 2025 trip of Amateur Traveler, and that is that it's going to be to Cuba. I'm still waiting on the pricing for that. And then in terms of who gets to sign up first, it's patrons of the show, followed by the people in the private Facebook group who voted on it, which is amateurtraveler.com/trips. And then I'll announce it on the show if there are any spots left open. I had other news that I was going to put in here today, but instead, I'm racing down to LA to see my new grandson who was born today. So welcome Logan Frank Christensen to the world. And with that, we're going to end this episode of Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com, or better yet, leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com. And thanks so much for listening.